morning and welcome to the Christmas season. How are you doing?
Woo!
Awesome. For those of you watching online, I hope and pray that your house is as festive as it looks here in the building, right? Doesn't this look amazing behind me? This is awesome. A lot of people took a lot of time to put that together, so thank you guys so very much. Again, I'm Paul. I'm one of the pastors here at Copper Hills, and I'd like to begin by just telling you a little story. Is that okay? You sure? That's all right? Okay. So I don't remember exactly the year or the date, but it was about 25 years ago. I had been a youth pastor for about 5 or 6 years, and I was up at junior high camp, which was up in Prescott, Arizona, United Christian Youth Camp. And that week, I didn't have a whole lot of responsibilities other than to just keep junior hires from killing themselves. But that was my main goal and job and responsibility. But in the middle of the week, there were these different activities that the junior hires could select to go and do. And for me, I felt like I could easily lead this. This was going to be a piece of cake. I was pretty relaxed the entire week. One of my friends, Ben, he came to me and said, "Hey, Paul, I'm in charge of rappelling this afternoon. And so I'm going to be out at the mountain helping junior high students rappel down. All I need you to do is just drive a group of junior high students there, drop them off, pick up the other group that just got done rappelling and take them back. Do you think you could help me with that?" And I was like, "Are you kidding? Yeah, I got that. That's easy. Piece of cake. No problem. I'm your guy. What do I need to do?" He goes, "Just drive to the place where the parking area is, park right there. There'll be a trail. It's really obviously marked. It's going to be easy. You follow the trail about 5 minutes. Then it obviously breaks off to the right. You break off to the right, and there you're going to go about 1 minute or so, and I'm going to be right there. You're going to see me. You can't miss it. It's going to be super easy." I was like, "No problem. I got this." Yeah, I was feeling pretty confident in myself as a leader. Just a little break. Don't answer this question out loud. Don't raise your hand or anything, but just generally speaking, how many of you feel like you're a pretty good leader? This guy's, don't raise your hand. We don't want anybody to know, all right? Again, don't raise your hand if you're... That's the way I was feeling. I'm a pretty good leader. I got this. This is going to be no problem. Piece of cake. So I load up these kids in the van. There's probably 10, 11, 12 junior high students. I get to the destination. I park. I see the trail. It's clearly marked. We start walking. We go. This is back before cell phones, you guys. And then I don't have a watch. I just didn't roll that way. I'm just like, I'm a good leader. I got this. So we're walking what must have been, it felt like to me, like 5 minutes or so. And then I see this kind of break in the path, and I'd be like, this must be where he's talking about. So I take a right, and then we keep walking. And again, in about a minute, I was supposed to get to where we were going. We hit like 2-3 minutes. We're not there yet. And I'm like, no problem. He must have just, he probably made a mistake. It wasn't me. He probably just got his timing a little wrong. We walked 3 or 4 minutes, still nothing. You know, 5 minutes past that. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here? To myself in my head, I'm thinking, did I screw up? Am I lost? No, I couldn't be lost. I'm a pretty good leader. This was easy. What's going on? We walk like 4 or 5 minutes, and now I realize I absolutely made a wrong turn. I have no idea where I'm going. And I just kind of pause and go, okay, guys, hey, we're going to take a break for a quick minute here. Let me figure out where we're at. I think I must have taken a wrong turn. This is probably going to take a little longer for us to get you guys to the rappelling point, but don't worry about it. And right at that point, there was this little junior high boy. He was hilarious. He was one of those super intellectual kids. And he goes, "Mr. Wilson, no problem. I'm in the Boy Scouts and I know what to do. None of us have water, but in case we're going to be here longer than normal, if we just pick up a little pebble or a rock and we all put it in our mouth, that's going to generate saliva and that's going to just kind of naturally hydrate us. So why doesn't everybody get a pebble and rock and do that?" He's like, "Who is this kid? It's like Bear Grylls in my group. What's going on?" And sure enough, he does it. All the boys fall. None of the girls do it. They were smart. You know, they realized these boys are crazy. But the boys now all have these little pebbles in their mouth. We continue to walk. And I go, "We got to turn around and go the other way." So we go back and walk back the way I came from because clearly I made a mistake. They didn't know that, but I was admitting that to myself now. And we walk another 5 minutes. Still don't recognize anything. We walk another 5 minutes and everybody's starting to get scared now. They're getting nervous. They're asking me if I know where I'm at. I'm deciding, do I lie to them and tell them, no, I'm lying. And then we finally, I go, "We have to stop, you guys. I am not sure where we're at." You notice I didn't say lost. I said, "I'm not sure where we're at right now." At this point, one of the junior high girls, she gets down on the ground and she just crosses her legs. She's like, "Oh my gosh, I knew this was going to happen. I didn't want to come to camp anyway. My parents made me. We're lost. I'm never getting home. This is terrible." She starts screaming and crying and everyone else is freaking out. I go up to her because, you know, in the In the youth ministry manual, here's what it tells you to do in this situation. Just kidding, there's no manual. I go over to pick her up and like lift her up. I'm like, come on, you can walk, you can do this. As I lift her up, she keeps her legs in crisscross applesauce. Like her feet won't touch the ground. And I set her right back down in that same spot. I'm like, I have no idea. I can't force this girl to walk. But I'm like, you guys, we have to move on. We have to get to where we need to go. They're like, well, you don't know where you're going. I'm like, oh, you're a good point. I don't know. But I know it's not that way. We got to go back. So we continue to start walking back a little bit more. And at this point, I'm realizing, dude, I am actually lost. I have never been here before. I don't know this trail. I don't know this little hill where we're supposed to rappel. And I'm just admitting it to myself. Like, I am lost. And I don't know how to get these kids to where they need to go. And I don't know what to do. I'm really stuck at this point. We walk a little bit further and I said, okay, guys, we're gonna stop right here. I kind of recognize this space. This seems familiar to where I think I made the wrong turn. Here's what I want you guys to do. I want you guys just to sit here for a minute. Don't go anywhere, stay right here. I'm just gonna go like a few yards away and I'm gonna scream out my friend Ben's name as loud as I can and see if he hears me. So if he can kind of tell us the right way and he can kind of rescue us. That was kind of my plan. Does that make sense? So in this story, this idea of being a leader is what we want to talk about. If you look behind me right here, it says, lead us. That's what we're going to be talking about this Christmas season. So I've got this question for you. To start off, would you say that in your life, you've had more good leaders or bad leaders in your life? More good leaders or bad leaders? Raise your hand, more good leaders in life. Raise your hand, bad leaders in life, like me that day leading those junior high kids. Okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna have a couple of built-in water breaks today because I'm recovering from a small illness. So this is gonna be water break number one. You're gonna share with people sitting around you and you're gonna share with people at home on your couch. What is the best or worst leader in your life and why? You have 40 seconds so I can have my quick water break. Go for it. All right, thank you for sharing during water break number one. Well done. Question number two for you is this. How many of you would prefer to lead yourself versus having someone else be kind of the leader of you? Prefer to lead yourself or someone else lead you? Raise your hand for lead yourself. Raise your hand for let someone else lead you. Okay, interesting. And then this final question. Who do you think can do a better job of leading your life? Who do you think can do a better job of leading your life? You or God? Yeah. Okay, I see where you're going here, Paul. All right. Well, that's really the essence of what we want to talk about. And how many of you would like to know the end of that story? Yeah, what happened? We left those junior high kids there, didn't we? Yeah, we left them there for a while. And that's so now you know what it felt like. You were kind of involved in the story. So the truth is, I told those kids to stay there, and I told them that I was going to go off and scream, which I was going to do, but I realized at that moment that I was lost and I needed help. And so as I left them there and I walked away for, you know, just far enough so that they couldn't hear me, I honestly just started praying to God. I said, God, I am lost. I admit it. Putting my pride down, I'm lost. I have no idea where I am. I thought this was going to be easy. I thought I had this, but I don't. Can you please direct me to Ben? Because I really don't know which way to go. I have no clue right now. I said, here's what I'm gonna do, God. I'm just gonna start moving in like different directions, maybe, you know, 100 yards here or there, and I'm gonna start screaming his name, and would you please just allow him to hear me? And sure enough, within the next 60 seconds in one direction, I scream out Ben, and he's like, Paul. I was like, thank you, God, this is great. So I go back to the kids. Hey, kids, I got this. I heard him over there. Follow me. We're gonna be out of here. Sure enough, I take him, lead him. End of story. Everyone was safe. Isn't that great? Everyone got home safely. But what a simple little lesson, life lesson that I learned that day. You know, that at the end of the day, God needs to be my leader, even in the little tiny simple things, not just me thinking I've got this and I can handle everything. And so that's really what we're going to talk about throughout this series. And as we begin, We're going to be looking at a specific passage of scripture throughout this series. It's Matthew chapter 2. If you have your Bibles, I encourage you to open up and follow along. If not, the scriptures that I'm reading are going to be on the screen. But we're only going to focus on one particular group of characters in this story today. And the characters that we're going to focus on are known as the Magi. And I'll be honest, we don't know a whole lot about the Magi. We've speculated about them over the years, and we've come up with theories and ideas. But the reality is we don't know exactly who they are. And we're going to maybe uncover and talk a little bit more about that in the next couple of weeks. But for this first week, the goal and the idea is not to figure out who the Magi are. It's to figure out what was the Magi doing? What was their motivation? What was their purpose? Why are they included in this story? So here we go. Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who was born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and we have come to worship him." A couple things we're going to talk about here. Number one, how many Magi are they? There's three, right? You know, all the nativity sets you set up, there's three people. No, we don't know. We don't know that there's three. There could have been 100. There could have been two, but there definitely wasn't one. One would have been Mag. It's Magi. It's plural. So we know there's at least two or more of these guys, but we don't know men, women, how many of them. We don't know how they traveled. A lot of times in your guys' nativity sets, you have camels, right? We just assume they traveled by camel. There's no mention of camels in the story. They may have walked on foot. So the bottom line is we don't know a whole lot about these guys as the story unfolds. But what we do know is this, is that they're traveling and they're going from one direction to another direction. Where are they going? They're going east. We don't know what that means. I mean, that's kind of helpful, but east from where? And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But that's kind of the basic thing we see here. But we know that one thing, what is leading them? What are they following? They're following the star. There's this one particular star that they're following. And their goal is to what? Go and see this person who has been born King of the Jews. So that's the baseline of what we learned from the first couple of verses here. Now the story continues to unfold. I continue on in verse 7. Excuse me. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." So we see this other character, Herod. He's known as the King of the Jews at that time. And he seems interested in this announcement, this discovery that there may be a baby who's going to be born King of the Jews. He's the King of the Jews. Does that mean somebody else is taking over his role? We don't know exactly his intentions, but we find them out quickly. Verse 9, after they had heard the king, they went on their way. And the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. And so much of this story is familiar to you. You know the part about them bringing the three gifts. That's why we've always thought there's three wise men, because there's three gifts. But again, that's not necessarily true. But the part that's interesting to me is that last verse. Having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But somehow God, again, intervenes in this story. God is still continuing to lead them in some way. He's speaking to them in a miraculous way through this dream to give them some information that they need to know. And then in verse 16, we realize what that is. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. And so now we see King Herod's true intentions. We see his true colors. We see what he's all about. He had no intention to worship this supposed newborn King of the Jews. He wanted to kill and remove this newborn King of the Jews. Well, in this story, as I've continued to read it time and time again, it's amazing how year after year, there are different things that I notice and that stick out to me. And this time, as I was reading it, there were three main things that really stuck out to me specifically about the Magi. And so we're going to focus solely on the characters of the Magi. These are the three things that jumped out at me. The Magi allowed God to lead their decisions. The Magi continued to follow God in their convictions. And the Magi focused on their goal of worshiping God. Let's go and unpack each one of those. Number one, the Magi allowed God to lead their decisions. I think what we all have to ask ourselves is this question: why in the world would these group of people who lived somewhere far off in the East, why would they have made this decision to travel just to go see a baby be born? Why would they do that? What would cause them to come to that decision-making process? I don't know if you realize how crazy of an idea this would have been 2,000 years ago. Traveling this far was not an easy thing to do the way it is today. You don't just buy a ticket, hop on a plane, and then you're there in the same day. Again, we're going to unpack later maybe where the Magi came from. We know it's in the East, but there's probably three plausible places they came from. Number one is they came from Babylon. If they came from Babylon, the distance between Jerusalem and Babylon is about 670 miles. If they were traveling on foot, and if they were traveling every single day and going the max amount they could make it, no problems, nothing came in the way, no distractions, they probably could have got there in about a month on foot. If they were traveling by camel, probably cut that time in half, 2 weeks journey. If, however, they came from Persia, which is another plausible explanation of where these Magi were from, you basically just double everything. It's about 1,370 miles, about a 2 month journey by foot, or a 1 month journey by camel. If in fact, actually, they were coming from about as far east as you could get, at that time, it would have been known as the Orient. We know it today as like the China area. If they were traveling from China, it would have been about a 4,000 mile journey. That would have taken months and months, 6 months roughly walking, 3 months by camel. In other words, can you imagine them kind of sitting together as a group and going, hey, do we want to make this journey? Do we want to make this trek? Is it going to be worth it? What was their decision-making process like? What made them land on a decision that would have said, this is a good idea? Yeah, this makes sense. Let's dedicate this amount of time and the resources that would have gone with it, and let's go ahead and make this journey. Unbelievable to me. And that leads right into the next thing. Not only were they allowing God to lead their decisions, they continued to follow God in the midst of the convictions that they had. Their convictions didn't wane when the difficulty came, when it got hard, when this looked like maybe this was a bad decision that we'd made. I want you to think about the resources that they would have had to bring along to make this journey. Can you imagine all of the supplies to make a journey of that amount of time? And again, we don't know how many was in their party. They had to have had so many supplies. What about the danger they would have faced? Back in that day, there were just people whose career was to sit around, wait for other people to come traveling and just steal all their stuff, just rob them blind and take everything. There must have been so many dangers and perils on the road. And then lastly, just the risk of what were they gonna do about King Herod? Not telling him about Jesus, the risk at the very end of their journey, what would that have encountered? This is gonna be water break number two, so I can grab a quick drink. I want you to talk with the people around you and just say, which one of those things that we mentioned there in their convictions, which one do you think was probably the most difficult one that challenged their convictions the most? Go ahead and talk about that. Thank you. So again, it's amazing to me that this group of people living far, far away from this area let God help them make this decision, a crazy decision that almost none of us would have undertaken. And in the midst of the decision, as they're going through this journey, this experience, this adventure, I can't imagine what they must have encountered along the way. There must have been so many opportunities for them to go, we're going back home. This is crazy. This is ridiculous. We didn't know it's going to be this hard. We didn't know it was going to cost this much time, this much resources. Let's get out of here. But it was because of number three. The Magi were focused on their goal of worshiping God. They were absolutely laser focused on their goal. You see, the entire trip was for one purpose, and that purpose was worshiping the promised Messiah who would change the world forever. And that's what has happened, right? That's why we're talking about this story today. Think about this story. This story at this time of the year is not just being talked about right here in the United States of America. This story is being talked about all over planet Earth. This story continues to be told year in and year out. And who is always mentioned in this story? The Magi. These guys, these girls, this group of people that we don't know how many of them. We don't know their whole story, but they're in the story. And they will forever be in this story. I don't know about you, but I would love to continue to be in this story in some way, shape, and form. I would love to have a role to play, a part in this. And that's what I think we need to be asking ourselves. How can we continue to be a part of this story the same way that the Magi have been a part of this story for 2,000 years? And so let's ask ourselves some of the same questions that we've learned from the Magi. Number one, how can we today be like the Magi and allow God to lead us in our decisions? How can we say to ourselves, you know what? I'm not going to be the leader of my life, God. I'm going to let you lead. I've seen what my life is like when I'm in charge, when I'm in control, when I'm the decision maker, and I am absolutely in need of help. And I would love for you to be the leader, the guide, the decision maker in my life. See, when I was younger, there was a book that really impacted me that helped me understand this process of allowing God to help me with my decisions. I don't know if you've heard of this book before, In His Steps. You're going to see a picture of it on the screen. Raise your hand if you've read this book. Yeah, in the first service, almost no one had read this book. Very interesting. I don't make any money off of this if you read it, but maybe I should invest in this. But this book is really old. It was written by a Christian author in 1896. And since then, over 50 million copies have been sold. This book kind of came back to prominence in the 80s through a movement known as WWJD. How many of you remember the WWJD movement? What would Jesus do? We had bracelets. That's actually the subtitle of this book, In His Steps, What Would Jesus Do? And at that point in my life, I was in my early 20s and someone introduced me to this book and I read this book. It's a really quick read. And the basic premise of this book is, would you be willing, before any decision that you have to make, whether it be small, whether it be big, ask yourself this question: what would Jesus do if he was in my situation? And so the way the book unfolds is there's a small group of people in a church in a small town right outside of Topeka, Kansas. And they make a commitment. They get together, they huddle up, and they say, let's try this for a year. For one whole year, let's ask ourselves, what would Jesus do as business owners? What would Jesus do as students? What would Jesus do as husbands and wives? What would Jesus do with the relationships that we have in our life? And they all made this commitment that they would ask that themselves of God first. And if they needed help, they would huddle up once a week and they would ask each other and then they'd report on how they're doing. And as the book unfolds, I'll let you read it. I won't give it away. Their lives dramatically change. Their lives go on twists and turns that they never saw coming, that they never thought they would get into, as they made some very difficult decisions to go, you know what, I would have just done this. This made the most sense. This is kind of a common sense answer, but I'm not gonna do that because I feel like God is leading me in this decision to do this instead. What would our world look like today if me, if you, if all of us really did say, what would Jesus do in my situation as a student, as a husband, as a wife, as a grandparent, as a coworker, as a friend? What would it look like? Well, that's what they decided, and it appears like that's what the Magi decided, and I want to encourage you this holiday season to maybe give this a try. You don't have to take a whole year, but maybe take a week, maybe take this holiday season and make a pact with somebody significant in your life, one of your friends, a spouse, your children, and say, hey, this holiday season, let's really try to evaluate our decisions this month. And let's say, what would Jesus do if he was put in our situation? I want to encourage you to give that a try. Number two, how can we today be like the Magi and let God lead us in our convictions? How can we let God lead us in our convictions? right away when I thought about groups being led by their convictions, I thought of these three businesses. I'm going to share these three businesses that you're all real familiar with. And then you're going to talk with the people around you and tell each other which one is your favorite so we can have water break number three. So here are the three businesses: Hobby Lobby, In-N-Out Burger, and Chick-fil-A. Which one is your favorite? Tell the people sitting around you and why. Go for it. All right, let's hear it. How many of you favorite was Hobby Lobby? There's our crafty people and a really excited crafty person in the back. Thank you. Woohoo! How many of you said In-N-Out Burger? Okay, not as big of a, but it's okay. And then lastly, Chick-fil-A. Ooh, some brand ambassadors. That's my choice. That's the Lord's chicken right there. Yeah. I don't know if you realize this, but they just recently found a sample of the original manna from the Old Testament, and they did a DNA sample, and Chick-fil-A chicken is the manna that fell from heaven. It's the exact same DNA. So when you eat a Chick-fil-A sandwich, it's as if you're eating manna that's fallen from heaven. That's not true, you guys. Don't spread that, but it sure tastes like it. I mention all three of those companies because all three of those businesses, companies are unapologetically trying to do what we're talking about. They are letting God lead their companies. They are resolute in their convictions. When things get difficult, when things get hard, when people around them are saying, you're crazy, you're dumb, that's a bad decision, don't do that, that doesn't work, they say, we're gonna follow God before we follow the world or good business practices or whatever it may be. And I don't know about you, but those companies are doing pretty good, yeah? They're doing pretty good right now. In fact, I wanna share with you this article. It's a little bit dated, but it basically completely addressed the issue we're talking about. It was done by CNBC. It said, Chick-fil-A does business with religious conviction. Let me just read to you what the author of this article said. Every day of the week, the Chick-fil-A restaurant chain rakes in millions of dollars. Every day, that is, except Sunday, when every single one of its stores are closed. It's not because of any state or federal law. This company answers to a higher authority. Honoring Sundays as a day of rest is just one of the ways Chick-fil-A combines two things that often don't go together: business and religion. With every customer it serves, Chick-fil-A also strives to serve God. It is a company grounded in Christian beliefs that drive everything it does, including closing on one of fast food's most profitable days of the week. Chief Operating Officer and President Dan Cathy said, business people are always quoting, you know, the great thinkers, people like Jack Welch, Peter Drucker, but we simply choose to go a little further back in history and we follow what was originally stated all the way back in the Ten Commandments. And that seems to still be working for us today. He goes on to say, we wouldn't refer to ourselves as a Christian business. In fact, for us personally, it's just simply John 3:16. For God so loved the world, including you and I. And so we don't claim to be a Christian business, but we unashamedly tell people, hey, you know, we operate by biblical principles. So why not then just leave religion out of the business entirely? Well, Cathy said the Warren Buffett of his day was a guy by the name of Solomon. And he even said this in Proverbs, in all of your ways. And so we say, even if we're selling chickens, in all of our ways, we will acknowledge the Lord, and then he will direct all of our paths. It's a religious conviction that Cathy inherited from his father, the founder of Chick-fil-A, who in 1946, when he opened his very first restaurant, made a policy that they would always be closed on Sunday so that his own personal family and then all the employees of his restaurant and all of his chains could go to church every single Sunday. Pretty impressive, right? These businesses have made a decision, excuse me, they've made a decision that they will not let anything else get in the way of their convictions. They are going to stay resolute on God being their leader, God being the person that directs their decisions and directs all of their convictions. And so then the last question we need to ask ourselves is this: how can we today be like the Magi and focus on our goal of worshiping Jesus, the Son of God, the promised Messiah who has changed the world forever? You see, as we enter into this holiday season, as the world wants to call it, we get to be a part of this story that's been going on for 2,000 years. And the story was even hinted at thousands and thousands of years before that. This story is pretty much the essence of humanity, that there is going to be coming into the world a savior, a king, someone who will come and will set us free, who will change everything. And our world has been completely changed ever since this little baby boy was born 2,000 years ago. And so you have a decision to make. How are you going to interact with this story? How are you going to be involved in this story? What will this Christmas season look like for each and every one of you? And so we want to give you an opportunity at the very beginning of this series to say, this is your chance now to make a commitment that for the rest of this holiday season, you're going to put Jesus first. You're going to worship him right now, and you're going to try to worship him throughout this entire Christmas season. And so in just a moment, we're going to be taking communion together. We don't take communion here every single week, but when we do take communion, we want to make it be an incredibly important time where we can remember exactly what Jesus Christ has done for each and every one of us. And so in just a moment, I'm going to pray, and then it's going to be an opportunity for you to actually worship in the same way that the Magi did. I want you to think about it. The Magi traveled hundreds, if not thousands of miles, and waited months, if not years, for this moment. For most of us, we drove, you know, 5-6 minutes today. Some of you maybe you're visiting from out of town, so maybe you traveled a little bit further, but you get to worship today in the same way that you made a little bit of a pilgrimage. You made a journey to be here where you're at today. This is your opportunity, just like the Magi, to symbolically lay some presents, lay some gifts at the feet of Jesus. Let him know that he is king, that he is what this time of year is all about. And then make a commitment to yourself and to others around you that you will worship him first and foremost. So this is the way it's going to look, practically speaking. We have two stations up here in the front, and we have two stations in the back. We're going to ask that the front half of the room, if you would come to the front, back half of the room, if you would go to the back. If you're on this side, you're going to use this station and that one over here, over there, and there. If you're in the center, we're going to ask that you kind of split yourself down the middle. You head to the center aisles, come and partake of the elements. And again, just take the elements back to your seat so that everyone will have an opportunity in a timely fashion to get the elements. For those of you on the outside sections, when you come up the middle and then work your way around the outside. So everyone in the outside sections come to the middle and then back out. And then lastly, in the middle sections, as you're coming back down, just kind of be courteous, not knocking and bumping people over and giving people opportunities to get back into their seats. But again, this is an amazing gift that we've been given by God, an opportunity to join into the story, to be characters in this story that has changed the world forever. So I want to encourage you to not take it lightly, to not just make this be, oh yeah, it's the same old Christmas story. I've heard this 1,000 times. I want you to put yourself in the place of being a Magi. Think what it would look like if you let God lead you in your decisions. If you did some crazy things this next month or this next year where everyone around you is like, what are you doing? I can't believe you're doing that. That doesn't make sense. That's not normal. That's not practical. But you're like, you know what? I feel like this is what God's asking me to do. I feel like this is what Jesus would do in my situation. And when the difficulty comes, when people are scoffing at you, when it's getting hard, when perils, difficulties are coming in your way, don't just give up, don't give in. Stay true to your convictions the way the Magi did. Make it not just a Sunday thing, but make it an everyday thing this entire season to worship Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the promised Messiah, God coming into the world. Would you join me in prayer? Dear God, we thank you so much for this story. This story truly has changed the world forever. God, we don't know a whole lot about these magi, but what we do know is that they were laser focused in worshiping your son, Jesus. That was their entire goal. That's why they made the decision. That's why they dealt with all the difficulty. And God, we're so thankful that they did. God, we want to be just like the magi. We want to be bold in our convictions. We want to be resolute in our decision-making, knowing that you are leading us, you are guiding us. And so, dear God, I pray that this holiday season, you would give us opportunities to have conversations with our spouses, our children, our friends, our family members. You would help us to share this story and to participate in this story in a way in which would bring you honor and bring you glory. That this holiday season would ultimately just be a declaration about your son, Jesus, that he is exactly who he said he was and that he has changed the world forever. And we will continue to give him all of the glory and all the honor that he deserves. We love you, Jesus. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.